So the Dhamma for today is called the Saraniya Dhamma. The Dhammas that... Well, Saraniya means memorable or worth remembering. So a simple explanation would be these are Dhammas that are worth remembering, but they're not especially worth remembering, not more than other important and valuable Dhammas. That's not really what the word Saraniya is best understood as here. Saraniya here means Dhammas that make one worth remembering. A person who has these, or a community, more importantly, a community that has these, is a community which thinks fondly of each other, a community which has harmony, a community which is mutually supportive. We know in the Buddha's teaching that companionship is incredibly important. The Buddha said it's the essence of the spiritual life to be supported by others and encouraged and instructed, guided by those who have knowledge and wisdom about the truth of life, about reality, about the path that leads to freedom from suffering. We can't get there on our own. But the Buddha didn't praise any companionship, just any old companionship. We know from our experiences in the world that our interactions with others can be fraught with danger, conflict, manipulation, bad examples, being led in the wrong direction by those with bad intentions or with bad habits, mutual destruction through the encouragement and emulation of each other's bad habits. And so the Buddha actually was more inclined to encourage us towards seclusion. And so the best kind of companionship and community is one that is harmonious in its support for mutual seclusion. Proper and supportive companionship is incredibly rare and difficult to find, because it doesn't involve just socializing or engagement in frivolous and idle conversation and activities. I mean, supporting each other in our mutual self-investigation, allowing each other the opportunity to find seclusion, not just with body, but also with mind. Not interfering, not triggering each other. It's an essential part of our development in the Buddha's teaching. And so our focus in creating a place to cultivate the teachings of the Buddha is on this sort of harmony and community that supports every person in the community to find their own path to freedom from suffering. It's something that we as Buddhist practitioners should be constantly vigilant, guarding against disharmony, guarding against conflict and unwholesome interactions with each other, either through anger or greed or delusion. And so this is the sort of Dhamma that in the long term for a life as a Buddhist monastic is crucial, and moreover is a essential part of moving as a non-monastic towards a more conducive lifestyle. We know from our time in the world that much of the again, the interactions and the life that we live in our relationships with others is, again, such a detriment and a drag on our spiritual life, fighting or engaging in sensuality and partying and enjoying and getting distracted and led away from spirituality by our interactions with others. And so these things are a reminder for all of us, not just those who are living in a monastic situation, on how important it is to cultivate beneficial and supportive community and to be the sort of person that attracts and encourages such community and grows and develops such community. So that's the sort of thing that we're talking about here, and what's important about these Saraniya Dhamma. The Buddha said they are dhammas that lead to harmony, they are dhammas that lead to non-conflict and that sort of thing. And so there's six of them. They're from the Chakkanipata of the Anguttara Nikaya, the Saraniya Wagga. The first three are pretty simple, obvious, not surprising. These are the three types of actions. Actions by body, by speech, and by mind. And the Buddha said the kind of actions that are saraniya, that make one memorable or make people think fondly of you or create for community and harmony, are those that are accompanied by metta. So the Buddha said the first three saraniya dhammas are metta kaya kamma, metta vajji kamma, and metta mano kamma. So the physical, verbal, and mental actions that are accompanied by kindness. This is a focus of ours, obviously, in our interactions with others, in our cultivation of society, of a Buddhist community. We're constantly on guard against annoyance, irritation, antagonism, frustration, boredom, trying to be patient with each other, supportive of each other, kind and well-meaning, well-intentioned towards each other. And so we do this with body, speech, and mind. Body, we are kind to each other. We act in such thoughtful ways as to support each other. The most obvious is to be generous with each other, giving gifts. If we see that someone needs something or could use something, we offer it to them. Or we think of people. When we acquire something, we think of how it might help them. When we see people who need support or need help, we help them. We do deeds to support their practice, cleaning for each other, helping each other clean, helping each other repair and build and do the work that needs to be done. Doing deeds thinking, this will be a support for my companions in the spiritual life. This will be for their benefit and for their comfort and peace. And this kind of attitude, where we're always helping each other, not looking and criticizing each other, not doing things to harm and to hurt or to antagonize or instigate others, but instead always thinking of what we can do for others and seeing when something needs to be done and having the kindness to actually be thoughtful enough to do things for each other, to help each other. So we're constantly thinking in our interactions with others, what can we do to be kind and generous and helpful to them? This is through gifts and through help and through support. There's so many actions. Another way that we can be thoughtful in our actions is to not bother others. So to not be loud or noisy, walking or running or engaging in activities that are going to distract or upset others. Being conscientious with our actions, conscientious with the things that we do, that they don't encroach on other people's space, or doing what we can to give people the space that they need to grow, supporting but not stifling or interfering with their growth. With speech, it means obviously for the most part not engaging in frivolous speech. The most important aspect of right speech is to not engage in wrong speech. So to speak only when it is truly beneficial and true and if possible, pleasant to others. So obviously not engaging in harsh speech, divisive speech. So how much how many times have we experienced divisive speech where people talk bad about us or talk bad to us about others, creating division, where communities are torn apart by gossip or slander or backbiting or manipulating or all the kinds of speech that are so horrible and obviously distracting away from the most important activity of cultivating mindfulness and wisdom and peace. But beyond that, with metta means we can engage in speech that is helpful, that is supportive, encouraging. How valuable is it to hear words of encouragement? Yes, you're on the right path, or oh, I appreciate what you're doing, or how much work you're putting into the practice. Having this kind of support and encouragement, a mutual encouragement, appreciating each other rather than criticizing. You know, how much of our speech to others is to criticize them, or to criticize others, or to speak badly about things that are going wrong instead of focusing on what's right and what's good, and encouraging in what's good, and being appreciative, being kind in our speech. It's so valuable. So we keep speech to the minimum, trying to give people the space, again, not to encroach upon their practice, but also we are thoughtful and kind in our speech, giving speech when it's necessary and helpful and beneficial to others, saying things that others are going to appreciate. Obviously, this is the sort of thing that leads to harmony, and so we should guard our speech and think before we speak is such a challenging but valuable activity. And for the mind, obviously, what we do in our own personal lives doesn't seem to directly impact others. Whether we think badly about others or criticize them in our mind, think about all the things that they are doing wrong or all of their faults, focusing on the faults of others, we think, well, if I keep it to myself, I just won't say anything to them and that won't be a bother. But obviously, this is not reasonable, and our actions and our speech are guided by our thoughts, even in the most subtle ways, by a look or a tone of voice, a way of comporting the body can be so much informed by our mental activity. If we're angry towards someone, it's going to show in our actions or in our speech. If we are arrogant or conceited, looking down on others, it's going to obviously show as well. Any bad, unwholesome qualities of mind or opinions we have thoughts we have about others are going to very much inform our actions and our speech, and moreover are going to create just a bad environment, an unpleasant environment for others to live if we have unwholesome thoughts. Now obviously in our practice we're going to give rise to all of these greed and anger and delusion. All of them will arise from time to time, but this is a huge part of, and of course the focus of our own practice is to eradicate these in the mind, but we have to guard against them, especially because of the danger they are to our harmony and the danger that they are to our community. The danger they are to our way of life, the danger they are to Buddhism, when we chase away others or we cultivate animosity towards others or any kind of encroachment or interruption of their practice, is all going to come from our unwholesome states of mind. And so we guard our attitudes towards others, and we think, if a person is in a good way, we try our best to appreciate that. And if a person has issues and problems, obviously our getting upset about the faults of others is only going to make the situation worse. And this is what leads to conflict. It's not people getting upset. And people's faults are not the cause of conflict. It's our reactions to other people's faults. And so The Buddha said it's worse to get triggered by the faults of others than to actually have those faults. If a person is angry, this is a problem, or this is a bad thing, but it's not really a problem until another person reacts to the anger and gets angry back. He said it's a worse evil to respond with anger, because we have flare up in all these different ways with greed and anger and delusion from time to time, but it's the reaction that's the most dangerous. And so we're constantly on guard. Metta and friendliness of as an attitude and as a support for our practice of mindfulness is such a valuable tool to keep us in an inclination towards each other that is wholesome and beneficial, kind and harmonious. Obviously, this is the most valuable quality in regards to the cultivation of harmony, is our mental attitude towards each other, how we feel about each other, and how we direct our minds towards each other, whether it's through kindness or whether it's through criticism and irritation. This is obviously going to influence and determine the quality of our community. So our cultivation of metta towards each other is so powerful and so valuable for cultivating a wholesome community and cultivating wholesome relationships with others. It's a practice that we undertake not as a main practice leading us to freedom from suffering, but as a protection, to protect ourselves and to protect our community. The fourth is similar to the idea of generosity, but the fourth is sharing everything. So as a community and as a Buddhist, being of the attitude of not hoarding or being stingy or jealous of others, but sharing as a way of life, not just giving, but thinking about the things that you possess as being a benefit to others and being a mutual benefit to each other. The Buddha said sadharana bhogi, one is one who consumes publicly. In other words, they doesn't think only of oneself in regards to one's possessions. The Buddha said, even in regards to the contents of our alms bowl, we share with others. We share everything. So this kind of attitude as a community is obviously something that would conduce to harmony if everyone has the attitude of sharing. Because obviously there are times where we are in need. Especially as Buddhist monastics, we with the non collection of money and wealth, we're going to have times where we are without things, where we are unable to by ourselves acquire the things that we need to live our lives and to conduct ourselves on the path to the realization of the Buddhist teaching. And so we rely on each other's mutual support. This kind of attitude is crucial in this kind of community, where we have this support that we can rely on each other and where we can provide for each other, where we can rely on each other to share the things that we need. Because obviously we can, as a community, fulfill each other's needs so much better than one person could alone. Sometimes there are things that I don't need that I have too much of, I can give to you. Sometimes things you don't need that you can share with me. And this relates to our actions and our thoughts and our behavior towards each other that is kind and beneficial. But it's more directly this attitude of sharing and thinking of each other and just having a way of life where things do not belong to us, they belong to the community. We go for alms, not just for ourselves, but to bring back food for everyone. We nowadays here at our monastery, the food that we get, the food that is got on alms round is shared even with the meditators, who are not technically monastics, but are living here as in a monastic lifestyle. And so we help to provide food for them. Everything that we own, we give to, we share with each other. Obviously, this is an integral part of the cultivation of harmony and mutual benefit. The fifth and the sixth are the two samanyatas, which means sameness, literally having the same way of these two things. The first is sila, and the second is ditti. But important to understand it, I've had this misunderstood before where people will say that this just means if someone doesn't keep certain types of sila or whatever, even view, that the most important thing is we have the sameness. But that's not what the Buddha said. The Buddha said our mutual purity in sila, in ethics, is what leads to harmony. So if we are mutually unethical, our sameness, our being on the same level in regards to ethics is not going to help us. It's not going to create harmony. Obviously, if we are unethical, killing and stealing and lying and cheating, this isn't the kind of behavior that would ever lead to any sort of harmony, even if we are all have a sameness. So our sameness means we all have the same mutual appreciation of ethics. And this is the sort of thing that leads to a memorable relationship and a memorable sort of community, a community that is harmonious, that is conducive towards the cultivation of good things. Obviously, ethics is a cornerstone of our practice as an individual Buddhist, but it's so much a part of our cultivation of a beneficial and supportive society and community that will give us the opportunity to cultivate the Buddhist teaching. If we are lying and cheating and so much stress and suffering is caused by unethical behavior that we have to worry about and watch out for and guard against and work through the problems of others. If other people have to deal with our unethical behavior, it's such a drag on their spiritual life, and it's such a drag on our spiritual life to be surrounded by people who are unethical, having to worry or care about these sorts of things. Where conversely, if we know that the people around us are ethical, are principled, not killing, not stealing, not lying, not cheating, not engaging in the slightest activity that could cause harm to others or cause disruption to the community, this is so such a huge load off our minds, to not have to worry about these sorts of things, to be able to rely on each other and to be able to be sure that those around us are going to engage in only those activities that are of benefit to themselves and others. So There are a huge number of rules that monastics have that are not truly related to ethics. Things like not using money, things like the way that we build our society, the way that we conduct ourselves in our community. The sorts of things that are mostly important in the building of a beneficial society. And if you live in a monastic setting long enough, you'll start to see the difference and you'll start to see the problems that come from the addiction to wealth and money and possession and to many other kinds of activities that the Buddha cautioned us against in his laying down of the monastic rules. So many of them are just simply for avoiding this sort of conflict and this sort of disruption of each other's spiritual life. Ethics is a important part. It's not just ethics, but it's the way of life. You know, having a very conscientious way of life with rules. Rules of the community, rules that might not be essential for one's own spiritual growth, but are essential and at least valuable for the maintenance of a society that is conducive towards the cultivation of spirituality. Obviously, we know from the way of life in the world that lack of ethics is such a drag on one's own life, and one's own spiritual life especially, having to worry and fear and engage in lawsuits and criminal cases and just guarding and worrying and constantly being vigilant against the unethical behavior, the lack of ethics that exists in the world. You can see how important this is for harmony, obviously. And the sixth one, perhaps the most important one from a Buddhist perspective, is again view. So sameness of view, not just having sameness, but sameness of right view. So living in a community where people have right view and the same right view. Because of course, there are the spiritual teachings and religions of the world all have views and all think that their view is right. And they can't all be right. Some there is overlap. But obviously there are points of contention that can't both be right, where one spiritual tradition teaches this and another teaches that, where you can't you can't harmonize the two. You can't reconcile certain points of contention. And so we can't expect everyone to live in harmony together, because views are an important part of harmony. People with differing views are at the very least going to just lead to debate and argument and so on. At worst, will lead to fighting and resentment. We can lead to doubt. When you have two different people proclaiming two different ways as right, everyone around them is going to be doubting and wondering and unsure, and will be weakened in their own, at the very least, will be weakened in their own effort and energy as they have to engage and determine, you know, consciously considering and working out the arguments and the premises of other people's arguments and views. Is such a drag on our own spiritual life, having to think about these things, having to worry about the views of others and having to argue with the views of others. It's such a valuable thing to have a tradition and to have a spiritual doctrine that we can follow. It's something that is a challenge for newcomers to follow and to give up their own opinions and their own views and their own addiction and inclination towards cultivating their own views and being an individual. You know, it's dangerous and difficult for people. It seems dangerous to have to just accept the teachings of others, and obviously it can be dangerous if we're not careful. And so we're accustomed living in the world to constantly being on guard against other people's views that could be wrong or manipulative or harmful, that could lead us to heading down the wrong path if we were to follow their views. We've all found ourselves caught up by charismatic individuals who have views and opinions that we take on as our own and realize that are harmful, are unwholesome, unethical, and unbeneficial for ourselves and for our development of a spiritual life. And so we do have to be on guard, but once we have found a teaching that is beneficial, it's essential that we give up our own views, even our own opinions, our own ideas about simple things about how to live our life. There was this case of three monks who lived together, and what they said is that we live like milk and water. Milk and water, when poured together, they become one. Even though we may have different ways of life, different attitudes or behaviors, different personalities, but we don't let these stand in the way of our harmony. We are constantly thinking to give up our own opinions and our own ideas in favor of those of each other. We're constantly able to find this harmonious way of life, trying to find one way of life. The Buddha said, Eki Bhava, these dhammas are what lead to oneness, becoming one with each other. Not literally, but one in terms of being harmonious, you know, being on the same path. Our requirement in our cultivation of a Buddhist community is that we all be on the same path. Not only are we all Buddhist, but we are all following Theravada Buddhism. Not only that, but we are all following the specific tradition of the Satipatthana Vipassana that was taught by the Mahasi Sayadaw and by my teacher Ajahn Tong. And as we as we follow here. Not that there are not other beneficial paths. And so this is where not only right view is important, but it, as a community, sameness of view is important as well, to not be distracted or confused led astray by the multiplicity of views that are out there. Obviously, avoiding and giving up wrong views and giving up views in general, just allowing ourselves to be led by the Buddha, led by his teachings, and led by the tradition that we're in as a specific expression of the Buddha's teaching, which we follow not just for our own benefit, but for the benefit of the community, that when our view is the same, when we are following the same path, we're not questioning or doubting or worrying about whether we could find a better path. There's such a benefit when we're able to do that for our own peace of mind, but more importantly, or equally as important, for the peace of mind, of the peace of the community, where we have a community that we know and we can depend on each other. If we come to each other for answers to our questions, we know that these answers are going to be simple and in line with the teaching that, and the practice that we're following. And we don't have to worry about getting opinions from different people, getting a second opinion or a third opinion, or wondering which opinion is right, when we all follow the same tradition and the same practice. If we can do that, and if we can have a practice that is worthy of that, which I think we have found here, then there's such a benefit to our own spiritual life and to the harmony of the community, which aids us in our spiritual life. So these are the six Saraniya Dhamma, essential in a practical sense for the cultivation of the most essential practice of the Buddha's teaching. These are not directly the cultivation of mindfulness, but you could also say that a person who is engaged in mindfulness is most suited and perhaps uniquely suited for the cultivation of these six things, that our practice of mindfulness is an essential part of our cultivation of a wholesome society, because it leads to these six things. It leads us to have kindness towards others in our actions, speech, and thoughts. It frees us from the unwholesome attitudes and qualities that stem from not being mindful. It leads us to be able to give up our possessions easily, to share with each other, and to be ethical, and to have right view. When we see things truly as they are, we have no sense of need for arguing with others or of clinging to views and opinions. We're able to give up and let go of views and opinions in favor of the simple reality of life, that everything is arising and ceasing, nothing is worth clinging to, and that freedom from suffering comes from letting go. So those are the Saraniya Dhamma. That's the Dhamma for today. Sadhu.